You're listening to An Introduction to the Catholic Life.
Salve. And welcome to An Introduction to the Catholic Dating Life. welcome to the Introduction to the Catholic Life. We're going to be doing a podcast on dating, as per request of a listener back in 2017. we are finally now tackling topics that you've asked for. A notification and saying that the website has been, like, the subscription's renewed again for the second year, so we're now into, like, the third year of doing this podcast.
I mean, we've not been the most consistent over some periods of time, but for the most part we've been present in some way for that amount of time. It's quite cool. Doesn't feel like that.
No.
Although at the same time it does, kind of. You think back to the first recording, like, we were all in quite different places.
And you are now, the last time, I always remember the start because Naomi was pregnant and we kept coming in with chocolate, like, every time at your house.
Easter eggs and that.
She was pregnant and we were like, oh, well, taking Connor's time up, like, 3 hours a day at the weekend, so.
Yeah, we used to record in Naomi and I's flat and, yeah, the guys would come over with a peace offering of Easter eggs, I think it was, wasn't it, quite often? Or some sort of bar of chocolate for Naomi, my wife, so. Yeah, that's crazy, and she's pregnant again. So.
And getting there as well.
Yes, 3 weeks time. So by the next podcast, baby could be here.
Oofed.
But certainly by the one after that. So say a wee prayer, it all goes well.
Amen. Amen. Well,
we're slow in the chat. How are you all keeping up? See, the last time we spoke about New Year's resolutions, and we're saying everyone should do them. How well are we doing with New Year's resolutions?
I'm doing not too bad. I've not been late to Mass. I was very nearly late to Mass, I will admit. But wasn't. Made it for the opening blessing, but only because the priest started late. But you know what? I'll take it. Not too bad. I'm on some crazy diet, so I'm like hardly eating. I'm eating really random stuff. Or I suppose it's not random, but
Sean
that's quite hard.
Veganuary.
I had the same thing. I went to Mass and I was like, oh, I'm running late here, but they started late and I was like,
God works in mysterious ways.
Yeah, just one of those little miracles where you're like just witnessing miracles all the time.
I think we should install VAR into churches to check that, because when did you enter into the threshold of the church?
Offside.
Yeah, but also I noticed one of, like, a pub that I quite like having a chalkboard saying it was going to be doing a vegan only menu for February or something. I didn't want to name and shame them on the podcast, but I won't be back
for January.
So hold on, are they literally only doing vegan food?
Well, that's what the chalkboard
seems to suggest.
That's terrible, man.
So it's quite often we go there for breakfast. In fact, I think hopefully it'll be done by February, because I was actually thinking about around the Feast of St. Scholastica, that's something we could do, go for breakfast. But if it's a vegan breakfast, I'm not in.
No.
It's quite immoral, really.
Yeah.
Won't be back.
I couldn't do that. I'm basically just eating meat at the moment. I'm not quite on a carnivore diet, but something similar. So.
Hey, Jordan Peterson.
Pretty much, something like that.
He only eats meat, isn't it? Like, only eats steak
literally.
Or something like that? Like, no sides or anything?
Yeah,
just
beef
meat.
All the time. Yeah. I don't know how, like, I can do that. I'm still eating, like, avocados and stuff like that.
Smashed avocados or some toast.
Is that his, like, just his diet, or is he just, like, kind of OCD?
It is a thing. Like, his daughter did it as well. She had some aggressive form of arthritis, and she went on this carnivore diet, and it reversed a lot of the symptoms, which was kind of quite
crazy. So he does it as well.
Crazy. Mm. So the two of them do it.
Lovely.
Don't try it unless you're crazy, in case anyone's listening to it thinking, I've got arthritis. But,
you know, just thinking about how countercultural we all are, like, we're sitting talking about going in for a meat only diet whenever most people are talking about going off meat only.
I know. Anyone else had, or oh, James, you've been on Exodus.
Mr. Exodus.
Mr. Exodus.
He's on a journey.
Yeah. Nah, it's going well. It's good. It's good that makes you commit to doing different things, so eating well and exercising and prayer and all that kind of thing ties everything in, so once you commit to it, then that's you, so it's good. It's bringing a bit of structure to my life, which is
nice.
Handy, because I live a chaotic lifestyle. But what I was thinking when you were saying about that, this, or countercultural lifestyles, watch that A Hidden Life in the cinema. It's about Blessed Franz Jägerstätter, who lived in Austria during World War II when the Nazis were in power. And just, it's like a really beautiful film. Just like lots of different, lots of imagery following his family, his family life, and just their day-to-day family life and how that was affected by his decision to basically, you know, he didn't want to make a vow of loyalty to Hitler because he thought he was bad and his conscience dictated that he couldn't do it. And so their whole culture, their whole, you know, society basically outcasted them, the entire family. And so it just follows all of that and how they live their day-to-day life in that. And I thought there's so much in that that really ties in with the modern day life and where we're going in society as well. I would recommend, if you can.
Yeah, it's a film which you appreciate in a particular way if you look at it through the lens of faith. It's a film in some ways which many people might miss the meaning of. They won't understand the sacramentality of the film, perhaps, but it's quite clear from Franz Jägerstätter's witness and his family's witness that they lived lives at which God was always at the centre. He was at the centre of family life, he was at the centre of their daily routine. And that's something which we miss today. But in some ways, it's not a million miles away from today's topic, family life, marriage, and indeed where that begins. That's covered a little bit in the film too, how Franz himself and his wife met each other and how that came about. Quite interesting to look at. It's quite something to behold in the cinema as well. It's a really special film, but quite a witness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, just a holy life, anyway. A simple, you know, just a dedicated life as well, though. So dedicated to his faith and dedicated to his family and his vocation. And if you have that kind of dedication, then it will filter through and everything else, and you kind of, you can sanctify your life through your day-to-day. Anyway, let's move on. So the topic was from a question from someone who asked, how do I meet, you know, like a lassie without going on something like Tinder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I mean,
which isn't what the topic's going to exactly be, but that's a good starting point. So I think maybe this podcast won't exactly be, you know, specifically these are the things to do and don't do. Maybe our own experiences of dating and what we think, you know, is the important things and. Maybe a sort of idea of what it should look like, and I think what a very easy thing to do is to look at what society offers us or what society's idea of dating should be like, and how we counter that. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, the question came from how do you meet someone if not on Tinder? So, you know, Tinder is an online sort of dating app where you swipe people right if you like the look of them, and swipe them left if you don't like the look of them, and then if you match, then you can talk to them. So is you know, even the very basis of that is completely different from our perspective of, you know, the other person and how we meet, not only how we meet them but how we actually look at them. So society's view of relationship is basically boiled down to sex, I would say. And that's what, you know, Tinder has that kind of, that very sort of, it's stark imagery, mm-hmm. and people are looking at people and, you know, not interested in the person at all, but looking at, you know, their body and looking at them in an objective way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's the same, I mean, even if it's not on Tinder or whatever, but I mean, your other kind of bog standard place where people would meet, according to, you know, kind of secular society, would be in a club, where similarly people are, you know, far, I mean, you know, the lights are so dark, you can and the music's so loud, you couldn't actually have a normal conversation with anyone. You know, it's people are just looking at each other's bodies, same kind of thing as Tinder. And that's the foot that a lot of people get off on, and there's an expectation for kind of secular dating that it will be very, I don't know if you want to call it visceral or something like that, but it kind of denies the dignity that we have as human beings. You know, I don't think anyone, I don't know, if they were asked maybe when they were younger, how would you like to meet your future husband, wife? You would have a kind of more romantic kind of view of how you would like to meet people.
In some ways, it seems that people treat their dating lives as consumers, I suppose.
Yeah,
You go onto Tinder or other dating sites and you look at a product, you evaluate it, you rate it, basically, as you're saying, you swipe right or you swipe left according to whether you like someone's physical appearance or otherwise. And people tend to have that same consumeristic mentality when it comes to face-to-face encounters as well. Mm-hmm. People make immediate judgments, and people often commit to intimate encounters with each other without really having got to know each other at all. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a problem. You know, sex comes first and then you get to know the person, mm-hmm. as opposed to the other way around, where you have an encounter with another human being, and then obviously you go along that vocational path as we would see it, as God has so ordained it. People have forgotten that completely. We've flipped it mm-hmm. round entirely, and that's something which we have to work to correct.
And the purpose is totally out the window, because you touched on a key point there. You know, we go on a path of vocation, you know. Secular society, you know, there is no kind of purpose to dating. The end goal is, you know, consumer satisfaction, which, you know, they'll see as a one-night stand or something like that. But whereas we would see the correct outcome of dating to be, well, you know, am I going to marry this person? You know, trying to discern, is this my vocation to be married? Is it not? You know, it's a serious questions that you ask yourself while dating, that the modern world seems to have just kind of thrown out the window, which is a shame, because it denies that kind of that purpose to life, and we need that.
And because of this culture that we live in, that you've all been describing there, I think that's why it's so hard for young Catholic men and women to actually know what to do, you know, because it's quite clear that we can't engage in that hookup culture through things like Tinder and whatnot. So that's kind of off the table. But then the question arises, what do you do except from that? Because most of our peers who are living the kind of secular life and wanting to find someone will go through those means, because I think it's probably quite a high success rate. I think if you were to go on Tinder and go through, you know, a couple hundred girls in an evening, the chances are you might match with someone and you could have a date next week. So it seems like quite an easy way out, doesn't it, if you're looking for a relationship as a Catholic. But the problem is that with all those expectations, as you said, and what the relationship's going to be like, I don't think it's going to be a good way to find anyone that you're going to be able to meaningfully discuss things like vocation with and things like, unless you were to use some sort of, and this is a Catholic equivalent, which I don't think there is, because the whole structure of Tinder and the like is so anti what we would view as important, like the human dignity of the other person, etc. So that's 12 o'clock, it's the Angelus bell going on.
I think that point of consumerism is one that's really, really key. And John Paul II would often talk about that. So, like, his view, you know, his view on how we deal with all relationships. You know, the modern view, it does have that consumeristic nature to it. I think what happens is that, you know, in all relationships, people think, what is it I'm wanting to get out of this? And a relationship serves the function of their own pleasure, basically, in one form or another. So the relationship doesn't have any sort of outlook towards the other person. It's all you know. It's all individualistic and towards their own pleasure. But what I think is interesting is that, you know, you can't on these messaging sites and things like that. You can't get to know someone in any sort of way. So if people are asking the question, how do you meet someone, or how do you go swim against the tide? You just swim against the tide. You know, it's a simple answer, but you break the sort of the standard that the world is setting, and you'll be surprised. So you know, you have to meet people in person. That's I think that's, you know, you have to start to speak to people and get to know them and you know, become friends with them. You know, that there's not, you have to, if your view of someone is, you know, I want something out of you, it's not a friendly relationship. It is X, Y, or Z. You know, I'm wanting, you know, more from this relationship so that I can get my own pleasure out of it. You're never looking at that person in the right manner from the word go. So the thing is, if you start to look towards someone and are open to getting to know them without any sort of pretense, then you'll be surprised that, you know, you'd become friends with them, that you'd get to know more about them. And, you know, as you fall in love that way. You don't always just fall in love straight away and say, like, well, that's it, it's perfect, everything's, you know, magical. But, you know, the more you know about someone, it's like our faith as well. Mm-hmm. The more you know about the faith, the more you fall in love with it. You know, the more that it sort of feeds absolutely everything that you do. But the people who you meet, if you are open to giving them a relationship without these sort of pretenses or expectations of certain, you know, certain acts that, you know, that you're going to have to perform for them, that they'll respond to that, because people want to be treated properly.
Yeah.
You know, like you have to look at someone and say, how can I treat them properly? The way to treat them properly is to, you know, to give them, to recognize that, you know, they're creation and the image and likeness of God, and to give them the sort of respect that they deserve, and actually, you know, to want the best for them.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're all made for. You know what I mean, everyone feels fulfilled when treated like that. That is, you know, definitely our perspective on it. It's an interesting kind of point. I remember hearing this recently. I don't fully agree with it, but I see the point the person was making. Someone said, you know, you are your five closest friends. You know, so you're a mixture of, you know, the people around you. You behave in the same way they do.
Oh no! I'm looking around the table.
You know, you are a mixture. Either by proxy of being close to them, spending a lot of time with them, or by the fact that you've chosen them to be around you. You know, you look for like-minded people, and it's maybe a bit of a danger. If we do follow the same route of going to clubs, downloading Tinder, all this sort of stuff, that we will just fall into the exact same trap. So I think it's kind of an important point to make, that we need to find like-minded friends and go to places where people that want to be treated that way are. You know,
it's a good point. There's a great line from Chesterton, and I might be misquoting him here, but he says, you know, keep the commandments, break the conventions. Or the other way around. Mm-hmm. I think that sums it up quite nicely. We're called to be men and women of the commandments, not of the conventions. And that's something which applies 100% to dating in the 21st century. 100% it applies to us. We're called to be people of the commandments, not of the conventions. It's interesting what you're saying there, Sean, about keeping good company. You know, not just with respect to dating, but in friendship circles and so forth as well. Often I think in dating, Catholics can maybe fall into this trap of trying to fix somebody. You know, they might sort of find someone who's a bit all over the place with respect to their life and how they live it, and they might think that they themselves as individuals can fix that, which, you know, the onus is not on us to fix other people. That's on God. You know, God brings people's lives together. He brings a whole sort of spiritual tapestry together, and we can't sort of big ourselves up to the extent that we think we can fix other people without God's grace, you know. Mm-hmm. So it starts, I suppose, with having that platform, that foundation of the commandments, abiding by the Catholic life effectively, before you even enter into the realm of dating at all. And that's something which pertains entirely to keeping good company, as you're saying, Sean.
And I think that's one of the what you're hinting at there, Rory, about the, you know, the tendency to try and fix someone It gets to the point, the wider point about vocation and how Catholics view relationships, doesn't it? Because if you are in a relationship with someone and you think, well, they're not on board with X, Y, and Z that the church teaches, or they're not Catholic at all, but you know, given you know the kind of over my life, I'm sure I can kind of convince them otherwise. In many ways, it's like I think we all know people who that's worked for. You know, I think there are some instances where that kind of approach can work. And this, you know, the other person relationship does come to Christ and it does go well. But I think if we're being realistic, for the most part, it doesn't work like that. And if ultimately relationships and dating is so that you can discern with another person whether or not you're called to marriage, which is ultimately a path to holiness and your own sanctification to get you to heaven, then entering into that or discerning, entering into that with someone who is, you know, completely opposed to what your vision of that would be, then I think that's it's a bit dangerous, isn't it, to a certain extent, because by doing that you're setting yourself up for a life of kind of disunity in terms of faith, which is, like I said, I know people who has worked for, but I think for the most part it's a bit hard. But then the question comes, how do we meet like-minded Catholics then that we can share that vision of marriage with, or share that vision of even dating? Because let's be honest, if you meet a lovely, you know, meet a lovely girl in a pub somewhere and you start chatting to her and then you think she's lovely and you start going out on dates and stuff, the chances are that she might, you know, well, in fact, will almost certainly not be on board with the church's teaching on sex before marriage, etc., which is going to be a problem for you. And you can try and overcome that, of course, but then it's just problem after problem after problem. And although you might really like that person, it's, you know, whether or not it's going to work is a kind of question to be
and marriage asked. Won't fix that. This is the thing. So it might well present problems before your married life if you come to an agreement on that, but even post-marriage, you know, there are still so many problems. If people have a different conception of what that looks like, what you can and cannot do, what the model life looks like, there are going to be many, many problems. And as you say, that can be a real burden.
Yeah,
it really can be a burden. And I think it's so important to have that common foundation.
Yeah, and of course you don't want to deny the grace in the sacrament of marriage. I mean, these things can change, and God does work through the sacrament and can bring unity when there is disunity. But at the same time, you know, if you like to think of marriage as almost like, you know, you're picking someone or you're with someone to kind of enter into the battlefield of life. You know, you're picking a partner to fight alongside for the duration of your life, with all of the ups and downs that will have, with the ultimate, you know, aim of the victory at the end of your life, of being able to enter into heaven together. And so when you're thinking about entering into that battle, which we all need to fight in our lives, you want to pick someone that you think is going to be have your back and going to be with you the whole way through it, and not be kind of not share that vision with you.
I think that's a good image as well, for, you know, you are entering into a battle, and even, you know, those aspects of dating. Yeah, there's going to be a point where you have to be a bit courageous and say, look, on these points X, Y, and Z, this is my faith and this is what I believe in, and you'll get a response from it, and those types of conversations open up, open our eyes into what the other person views the relationship to be. You know, you're going to teach them about what our views are on marriage and going forward, and that, you know, you enter into a relationship with the thought of, is this the person I'm going to marry? So in that respect, you're respecting them, you're giving them the due respect that they deserve, and you're also wanting that to be reciprocal. And if you're courageous enough to, you know, to have these conversations, then you'll find out, and that's a good thing. Do you know what I mean? Because there'll be a lot of people who, you know, you see it quite often. It's funny that, like, Twitter is one of these places where you see these kind of images, and I've seen something at Christmas time. It was like, you know, I've been going out with my boyfriend for 10 years and my Irish granny won't let us sleep in the same bed when we come over at Christmas. And you're like, your view of relationship is so, like, you've been going out for 10 years and you know, you've got such a low view of each other that you're just going to accept that, you know.
You can't commit to each other.
You can't, and, yeah. So the, you know, these you'll find some things about the person, and if you're courageous enough to state those things, even if you if they're not Catholic and they don't have those, you know, the same grounding, if they're respectful of it and, you know, they view those things as good, you know, you can journey with them. So it's important to be, you know, I think that you can do it as long as you set out with a bit of courage and say these are the kind of non-negotiable things as well. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
And I mean, it'd probably be quite interesting to see people's reaction to that, you know, not being a Catholic, because I think if you saw that strong conviction in your partner, it would really make you think. You know, it's a real opportunity for grace and for evangelization in a way as well, because I mean, that might be opening. If you met a girl in a pub, as you said, Connor example, and ended up going out and speaking about these things, it might be the first and maybe only chance that this other person might hear the Catholic ideals, the Catholic teaching of marriage, and it's a beautiful teaching. And you said at the start of the podcast, the more you get to know the church, the more you're able to love it. So it's, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing. You know, even those who are not in the faith, don't have the faith, I think they would probably, I'd like to think they would appreciate your kind of forthrightness and your kind of honesty mm-hmm. around these things, and you never know how they will actually respond to it. So I guess you just need to be kind of truthful about it with them.
I think one thing that might be worth, I mean, already touched on it briefly, you know, going to the same spaces, if you where like-minded people are. I can say this, Rudy can say this as well. I met Laura at the Strathclyde Catholic Society in university, you know what I mean? Like, and Rudy met Carter similarly in Glasgow Chaplaincy. Mm-hmm. So going to places like these and seeking out kind of communities of Catholics is, you know, it's an excellent place to meet people.
Because mm-hmm. it's so much easier to start dating someone whenever you know that you both have the same expectations of how this is going to go, and that kind of takes the pressure off you having to worry about what the other person, second guessing what the other person's thinking mm-hmm. if they're not Catholic, and how they're viewing things and how they're going.
Yep, and even for friendships as well, though, mm-hmm. you know, that's where it starts. You know, do you not want friends that are, you know, wanting the best for you? Because I think, you know, if you go to these places or you start to meet other people, and you know, I met Emily through Mary Hughes, who we'd known from the faith movement. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was their flat party I'd went to, and so these kind of things. If you're meeting mutual friends through people, so if you want, you know, if you want people who treat you with respect and want the best for you, then mm-hmm. you know, seek out people who are going to
help you there. Maybe I might have been hitting that too strongly, as like, you know, these are hunting grounds for for Catholic spouses. I didn't quite mean that, but
I think it's right, like, for the Catholic life in general, like, you need to like you've mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, like, you should try and surround yourself with like-minded people, those people who are trying to live the faith the best they can uh-huh. in their life, and trying to get to know our Lord better, and by doing that, by getting involved in your parish and the various youth movements and in the country you're in, going to things like the chaplaincies and stuff like that, then by doing that you enter into a community of young Catholics mm-hmm. who are hopefully taking their faith seriously, and then within that, you, the chances of meeting someone of the opposite sex to get to know is quite high, I'd imagine. I mean, I don't know. I know that in Scotland particularly it can feel like the numbers are quite low, like there's not as many of us around, you know, if that makes, I mean, put it in, think of our circles, for example, to make it personal.
It's a small world, I suppose.
All of, you know, we all know the same kind of Catholic people, and every so often kind of new people went into that, but I'm sure it can be, you know, I think that's got to be the starting point.
I'm actually just remembering when Claire, I hope she doesn't listen to this, when Claire started university at Glasgow, she was like, oh, I'm going to go to the chaplaincy, definitely going to meet my boyfriend there. And she was totally treating it as like a hunting ground, and she used to like always keep raging. She's like, there's no one there. Like, yeah. She totally had that.
And but then,
but she met him through, in fact, it was like it's like one of those too good to be true stories. They were like, they both helped out at like the same soup kitchen, and then like went on a date from then on. But like, but he was like a mutual friend of like Declan in general. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So like, you do meet friends of friends, and that kind of thing. So, But yeah, but going to those communities and seeking good friendship groups will lead to opportunities to follow your vocation, whatever that may be, you know. But particularly helpful with dating.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? You're often maybe only one or two people away from your vocation. You know, it's a good way of looking at it, I suppose, that, again, if you establish these friendships and keep good company, as we've been saying, you maybe are only that one or two people away from the chain, as it were, you know. So it's a good sort of way of looking at it, and you know, Claire's example is the perfect one, I suppose, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, but I think, you know, there is that sort of the point of it can be quite hard for people as well, though. And if they are in that situation of being, you know, it's the same kind of people that they're mingling with, and the same people that they've already met and they already know, then you start to think, where is this other person? So I don't have a full answer.
I mean, I think if you had an answer, like, you'd be solving a lot of people's problems. And yeah. I think probably the suggestion would be just to keep praying, keep close to the Lord, and keep trying to take opportunities that you can to meet other like-minded Catholics and just go from there. I mean, I just don't really know.
It's a question of trusting in Providence, really, mm-hmm. isn't it? You know, our lives run according to God's timetable, not our own, and often we can perhaps try to schedule our lives and think, well, we'll have achieved X by the time we're 25, we'll have done mm-hmm. Y by the time we're 30, and so on and so forth. But it's unfair in God to put pressure on Him that mm-hmm. way as well. You can't put God into, as it were, a slot in your own diary. You know, He's the one who's going to provide you with your vocation, with the inspiration to follow that vocational path, and that's all done in His time and according to His grace, not according to our own diaries and by our own efforts ultimately.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely patience, prayer.
Yeah, I think, you know,
and an open mind.
Yeah, you know, hoping in Providence, but not not being,
not scheduling it in.
Yeah, not scheduling in, but also, you know, you do have to work with God as well. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can't just sit on your laurels and, you know, hope that the person just falls into your lap. Do you know what I mean? You mm-hmm. you do have to seek out new experiences and new people and things like that as well. So I don't know. Prayer and movement, you know.
Prayer and movement. mm-hmm. top tip there. And probably don't speak about marriage on your first date either.
No, definitely not.
I mean, I think that's the thing, like,
keep it cool.
The Catholic view on dating is, of course, as we've said, that, you know, ultimately, after, you know, a while of dating, you should be thinking or discerning whether or not, you know, you might be thinking, I'm having a great time with this person, we really enjoy each other's company, we do loads of fun things, we're going days out and stuff like that, but I'm not thinking about actually whether or not she's going to be a good wife or he's going to be a good husband, etc. And like, it's important that we have that in our minds at some point. We start thinking, you know, really, there's no point continuing this relationship if I don't think that we're going to be a good, married couple. But at the same time, like, I think you can freak people out by going in the first day and being like, so, what are your plans for marriage? And they're like, well, even in Catholic circles where both people are, you know, very much aware of the fact that Catholic dating is for that purpose, I think you can...
You can scare people off that chat.
Just chill out.
Yeah, but you can also set your expectations far too high for the other person as well. Do you know, you have to, you know, we do keep these things in the back of our mind, and we do, you know, realise that dating is for a purpose. It's not, you know, it's not for its own end. But you know, it's there in the background, but you can't set those expectations up.
See that the point you just made about, you know, setting our expectations. I think it's such a good point for actually all of the Catholic life, because how many people do we know, including Wilford? I think I think we've all done this in the past before as well. When you get to the point in a vocation or in discernment where difficulties arise, the tendency, I think, can be to abandon ship and say, well, this is not for me because God's sending me these trials, you know, so therefore it's not for me at all. And unless you take that to prayer and properly discern that, then you're always going to be wondering at the end of the day, like, whether or not you made the right decision. So I think you've got to, in a relationship, you know, you're going to argue with the person you're dating with, probably. If you've not argued by, you know, then, you know, a couple, like a year in or something like that, then you've, you know, something's wrong, probably.
Yeah.
You're probably going to face some sort of difficulties, and then, like, to not take that as a sign of, like, you're incompatible, but to actually, you know, have hope and kind of see through it, because ultimately, the vocation to, you know, priesthood, marriage, religious life, etc. They're all filled with trials. You know, the Lord calls us to carry the cross no matter where we are and what we're doing. So that's going to come in relationships as well, which I think is a good point to make.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, and so going on that sort of point, expectation as well, you know, when we can't, you know, we do have to have that sort of the view of marriage in the background, and as part of that sort of discernment process within dating, you know, we have to look at the sort of whole of the relationship. So, you know, introduce that person to your friends and your family, and once you do that, and you know, you can start to see how that relationship relationship isn't just you and that other person, and all the other parts of your life don't fit into that. You know, mm-hmm. you're going to bring this person into the entirety of your life, so you have to look at how they fit in with that, and mm-hmm. if they, you know, and if they better you in all those areas. And I think that's a big part of it was definitely something that I read at one point about sort of Catholic dating, is a big part of how we come to know someone is how we see them when they're in front of other people, mm-hmm. and not just in front of us.
Yeah. And I guess there's things with relationships with your family and your friends, but the phrase is often used for Catholic marriage that, you know, it takes three to get married, that God has to be, Jesus has to be very much in the centre of that relationship and that marriage. But you probably say the same thing about Catholic dating as well, that you have to have the, you know, be beneficial to have the view that Christ is in that relationship with you, and then you can both refer to him for advice.
Best dating counsellor ever.
Get down on your knees and pray.
You know, whenever you say that silly line when you're on a date and Jesus is just sitting there like, oh. I should not have said that.
Aye, definitely.
Okay.
So this episode has been sponsored by SSPX Singles. thanks for listening. Download the app. Find SSPX members.
I doubt they have an app.
They probably don't have an app. You just send letters to each other.
Pen pals.
Yeah. That'd be good.
Very good.
But yeah, for anyone who's struggling to get a girlfriend, boyfriend, don't worry, God's good. You may be a priest or not, right? But
he's got other plans for you.
He's got. There's a plan for your life.
Just keep praying and have some hope.
Yeah.
Never give up hope.
So as always, you can find us on Facebook, iTunes, Twitter, Instagram, basically anything.
Yeah. Catholic match.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks' time for another episode.
Amen.
And so here's to the pint, the mic and the cross.
Cheers.